You're listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast, recorded at the BVA headquarters with your hosts, Troy McClain and Tommy Ahlquist. Each episode is focused on shedding new light on different perspectives to create dialogue that inspires excellence.
Hey, everybody, this is Troy McClain with Tommy Ahlquist, and you're on Inspire Excellence Idaho. We have a real special guest today, and we have former superintendent, Mr. Tom Luna, who's also a personal friend of both of ours. And I think you've hired his daughter, and I've hired his daughter.
Yes.
Different daughters.
Different daughters. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I mean, the DNA, we will talk about that in today's podcast, I'm sure. All right.
Well, welcome. Actually, we will talk about his DNA, but I found out that it's not Hispanic, it's not Mexican, it's Native American.
I did. We're going to jump right there.
No, wait, is this real? Is this real Native American?
Yeah, this isn't Elizabeth Warren. This isn't Elizabeth Warren type Native American.
You got to check now.
I know. Right?
At least I resemble...
Yeah.
Native American more than Elizabeth Warren. So I did my DNA a couple of years ago, and I always knew I had some Native American blood. 20%.
Whoa.
Pueblo Indian. That's out of New Mexico. So that surprised me that it was that high. And 40% Spaniard. Mm-hmm. That's how you get a Mexican, with Spaniard and Native American. And then 40% Northern European, which is obviously from my mom. So yeah, very, very interesting.
I have a just totally off topic. So we adopted our two little ones.
Yeah.
They have the same mother, different birth fathers. And so we were doing the DNA testing. And my littlest one, Allie, whose birthday is in 2 weeks, she turns 15. She is dark skin, mm-hmm. dark complected, dark hair. And we've always wondered, what her heritage was. And we just couldn't wait to test it. And so everyone made their guesses. And then we were on a trip somewhere. I can't remember where we were, but the results came back while I'm at a family dinner. And I'm like, okay, everyone guess what this is. So she ended up coming back 25% Swedish, 50% English.
Oh, wow.
And 25% Finnish.
Well, how'd that happen?
I have no idea. No one still believes it. So she goes around saying that she's a little Finnish.
Yeah, she can win some money, those parlor games, right? Somebody trying to guess her ethnicity.
Hey, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, you bet.
There's a lot of things we can talk about. You're one of my heroes, and you've done a lot in this state.
Well, that means a lot to me.
And still learn a lot from you, and we can't wait to talk about several things. But how you been?
Doing really well. Life's good.
Give everyone an update. I think everyone knows you from the days of state school.
Yeah. So since I left office, a few years ago formed a partnership with a number of former state superintendents like myself. And we all were serving at the state level at about the same time. We became good friends. We were part of a group of state superintendents that were really pushing the envelope on education reform, education improvement, bringing technology into classrooms and using the power of technology like we're using it everywhere else. I used to tell people it took 20 years to get the overhead projector out of the bowling alley and into the classroom. We need to catch up. We need to speed up here
a bit.
That's
a great line.
Yeah. And so for the past number of years, a group of former state superintendents, myself, we work with some nonprofit organizations and groups to help them navigate, the education policy and the work in education. And then more recently, we bought one of our clients. I'll sum this up real quick, but they focus on school turnaround. Mm-hmm. So we're under contract with a number of states where we've taken over school districts and schools and completely, took over, the facilities part of it, the financial side of it, the school achievement side of it. Gary, Indiana, which is a suburb of Chicago, it's known for the highest murder rate in the country, and Michael Jackson was born there, right? So we run that school district. They dismiss the local school board. They remove the superintendent. We come in with a full team and take over from soup to nuts. So that's been a big part of our work also around the country.
What is it about the previous modalities? And by the way, I love this word in education. Tom and I sit on another board, the Flyover Project, but I keep hearing the word pedagogy. And so my goal is to work it into every sentence.
Yeah, there you go. You did.
I did. So the previous modalities.
Still know what it means.
But I don't know what it means, but it sounds so cool.
He's kind of using it.
He always critiques me.
Yeah.
So the pedagogy of learning or the modality that you originally were dealing with, or everybody's dealing with, what is it that's wrong with it, or is anything wrong with it, and why are we changing it?
Yeah. So I think when we're talking about pedagogy and we're talking about the art of teaching or the craft of teaching, right, and what makes that up, I don't think that's our biggest challenge. Because I think for the most part, we have a talented workforce made up of quality teachers across the country. Not everyone is a quality teacher. Not everyone's a great teacher, right? Just like in any profession. We can talk about how to make that better if you want to get into those kinds of details. What I think is really the struggle in public education is the structure. How we, you know, what kind of accountability systems we put in place, how we spend the dollars that we have, how we identify what's working and then duplicate it. In many cases, we know what works. The trouble is getting districts and schools to actually adopt it because we're talking about change and the resistance to it.
You run into that in the medical field, though.
We do. And I, you know, I think of things that kind of all go together. You think of medicine and how it's kind of administered in the United States. You think of education. There's a lot of similarities in best practices and how hard it is to get those implemented. A couple other questions to follow on. You know, one of the things that was very interesting for me going around the state of Idaho, can't remember the exact number, it was 113 or so school districts.
115.
Not counting the charter
districts. About 60 charter schools now. Yeah.
And I think I visited somewhere around 80 school districts and talked to every superintendent, toured their schools, listened to them. And the number of opinions.
Oh.
Yeah. Well, everybody has an opinion because everybody went to school.
That's exactly
right.
It's an interesting thing because you go in and man, they're passionate about this is what I think and this is what where I'm going. And I've often thought of you as you were state superintendent and what you were up against trying to create change. And it's also a very resistant culture because of unions, because of the way it's been, because of tenure.
Yeah.
Boy, what a tough thing to tackle. Now I'm getting to my question. Then you look at results, right? Of, okay, how are we currently spending money? How are we implementing technology? And I'll say one other thing. I'm getting off a little bit here. But if you look at every industry, not just education, pick anything since the invent of the iPhone even.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you say, what's been disrupted in a very short period of time? And then you look at education, they're just behind. So some of, for me, it was coming from outside of education and going around and listening to people. I'm like, you don't get it. This isn't your fault. But technology is slamming into you.
Yeah.
It's not working. And you better reinvent yourself because it is not working.
Yeah.
And was that frustrating for you?
Because
it about killed me. I of all the things, I'm like, listen, there is nothing probably easier to kind of fix, but more resistant to change than public education.
Yeah. So let me tell you what we were dealing with in 2012 when we had the propositions for students come first. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The one that got the most resistance was the bill that we passed through the House and the Senate and the governor signed, which created more technology implementation in the schools. Yeah. If that bill had not been overturned, today every high school, every student in every high school in Idaho would have a device. It could a laptop, a tablet of some kind. Every school would be broadband. Connectivity with enough capacity so that everybody could be online at the same time. Today, we would say that's a no-brainer. As a matter of fact, one of the biggest arguments you have is some schools have and some don't. But back then, here's the arguments that were made against it. Millions of dollars were spent on TV ads showing a high school kid opening up his locker and the computer rolls out and hits the floor. One kid leaves his laptop open and the sprinkler outside and the sprinklers turn on and the kid pours his Coke on it. That's what the National Teachers Union ran millions of dollars worth of ads in Idaho because what they were trying to convince people is we wanted to replace teachers with laptops. Which is the craziest
argument you could ever make. I'm so glad we've never even had this discussion.
Yeah.
But you think about how short-sighted that was because you saw where it was headed.
Right.
You did.
Right.
You saw where the investments needed to be. You saw where we struggle as a state nationally or by any measure. We also have on top of that a rural problem where it's just harder to get into rural areas. And now you flash forward, it's 2020.
Yeah.
and you're 8 years after that. That's just got to piss you off.
Oh,
Tom.
It's frustrating.
it would make me so mad.
What frustrates me is you hear from the, now we have the haves and have nots. And that's what Proposition 3 eliminated.
Sure.
Every kid in Idaho, no matter where they went to school, had equal access to the same great teachers and same great curriculum because we could deliver it through a virtual mode. Just like most companies now and your company, Troy, that uses technology to train and teach like we do all across. We opened up that opportunity. It was actually a law in Idaho for 2 years. We had signed a contract to provide every high school kid in Idaho with a device, full connectivity, full support at the school level. I mean, and some states across America have duplicated what we did.
Right.
And then we lost it in a referendum 2 years later. So very frustrating. But I will tell you, when I go in and visit schools and stuff and they complain about the fact that other schools have technology and they don't, I ask them, how did you vote on Proposition 3?
Yeah.
And they kind of look at me like, yeah, that's a good point.
Well, it's a war of words. And so it comes down to messaging. And so you had the right position. They had a better message.
I'll tell you what, by the time they got done spinning this argument against these devices, you would have thought that when a ninth grader showed up at school, the first thing we did was give them a laptop. Mm-hmm. And once they got their fill of pornography, they were going to hawk it at the nearest pawn shop and we'd never see them or the laptop again. That, I mean, we lost this argument. We got rolled and out-messaged. And
outspent.
It's Tommy, you know how much it costs to run for governor.
Yeah.
They spent $5 million overturning. The National Teachers Union out of D.C. spent $5 million overturning Idaho's education laws. What you can be governor for $2.5 million in Idaho, right? So that's a level of campaign.
Well, a little bit more than that.
Yeah. Well, and you can't be governor with a little bit more than that either. Okay.
Way to go, Troy.
I'm just saying you can't
Okay,
be governor.
I'm not going to comment anymore on your pronunciation. Hey, so we'll get off this in a minute.
I don't want to relive all this,
but it is interesting as you go around, people are really good at complaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, let me tell you one thing I learned too.
There's so much complaining.
To be fair, we learned a lot through this referendum process. Right. One thing I learned is if you want the no vote, because it's easy to convince people to vote no, you confuse them, right? And so so there was a lot of confusion by the time it was done. People didn't know, so you tend to vote no, right? And
it's a safe answer.
Yeah, it's a safe answer. So there's the fact, I'm going to wrap it up this way and then we can move on if you want. When they were in the process of gathering signatures, nobody thought that they would get enough signatures to put these on the ballot.
Right.
We didn't know that they had just rolled the laws in Ohio and Michigan. Mm-hmm. And so they brought those same people to Idaho. They, meaning the National Teachers Union. The way I found out, I'm walking around.
What do you mean they
brought a team here that knew how to gather signatures. They knew
the
process.
For signatures.
Yeah.
No.
So I'm walking around.
That's
down.
That's the stuff that drives us crazy.
I'm walking around downtown Idaho. And this guy walks up to me with a clipboard. He says, excuse me, sir, are you familiar with the Luna laws? I said, well, just a little. Tell me what you know about them. And he proceeds. He says, I don't know a whole lot. I'm from Michigan. I'm just here collecting signatures.
Yeah, again, it's a game of message. It's a battle of words, and then it's who's got the better spin.
Yeah,
easy to say no, but it's a lot harder to step up like you did. And I will put you in this category as well because both of you guys step up and step out. Everyone's trying to fit in, but few of us are born to stand out. And guys like you are born to stand out. So I'll tell you, great job.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. Well, and we moved the ball a long way down the court. And I want to say one thing real quick. When I talk about unions, I'm talking about union leaders, not necessarily union members. Most union members is just your average teacher, puts her head down, does her job every day and does it well.
Yeah.
It's union leadership. That's a problem. But you basically have a monopoly running a monopoly. You have one union running a monopoly, which is the public education system.
What's the solution?
More school choice. Mm-hmm. I think we need to recognize the fact that when a kid enters school, the most important factor in academic success is the quality of the teacher in the classroom. So we can't leave that to chance. We have to make sure our policies, the way we compensate teachers, the way we recruit them and retain them is all focused on keeping the best and brightest.
And I think you said something very valuable that you had launched a campaign where, and I'm going to paraphrase, where it was college to careers. And you realized that, wait a second, that was a misnomer because it's not college to careers. It's just a path to careers.
Yeah.
So we have Tommy launched through Inspire Excellence, Teens for Trades. Always back.
Here we go. Okay. Teens to Trades.
Yeah.
Hey, he's got the name of the podcast.
I got it down. I
only just finally
5,000 episodes later. Teens for Trades.
Yeah.
About
10 years ago, we coined the phrase college and career ready.
Okay.
If we had to do that over again, we should have just talked about career ready.
Got
because
it.
People figured we were talking about one or the other. You were either college ready or you were career ready. And really the focus is career ready, right? We want students to focus on a career, and there's multiple pathways to careers. Some of those careers, that pathway takes you right through a 4-year degree and sometimes even higher. Some of that pathway is a 2-year associate. Sometimes it's not, it's post high school.
Yeah.
It's certificates and it's credentials, it's evidence of mastery, but there's many pathways to career. So what is that career that grabs a kid's attention and they see relevance, right? And to what they're learning, that it's attached to that career that they're pursuing. That's the disconnect. And so if we had to do that over, I would have
just focused on
career. So
I'll tell you what, just listen to you. And we've talked education before, especially during the campaign. But I just listen to you and I'm like, this guy gets it.
I appreciate
that. You just
that.
Understand everything about it, about where we are, about where we've come from and where we're heading. And it just drives me crazy that we still spin our wheels so much. And then you hear a lot of these other things going on. You're like, man. I wish, jumping forward, because we do have a lot of other things to talk about. State of education in Idaho, 2020, Governor Little's there. I know you just were in his office a few minutes ago.
Yeah.
Teacher pay just went up.
Yeah.
Tell us some good things going on and then tell us a few other areas you think we still need to focus on.
So I think that, you know, one of the things that we started, and it took us 3 runs at it to finally get it started in Idaho, and that is change the way we compensate teachers. Most people believe that teachers aren't paid enough, and I'm in that category and always have been. But what most people don't know is how we pay teachers. Across America, and until not too many years ago here in Idaho, teachers across America are primarily paid based on how many years they've taught and the amount of education they have. So it's a grid. Mm-hmm. You go down the number of years you taught and over with the amount of education you have, and where you end up on that grid is how much you pay. So if I'm the best teacher in my district, and I've taught 8 years and I have a master's degree, I make the exact same amount as the most struggling teacher in my district that has taught 8 years and has a master's degree. How is that fair to teachers and how does that help students? So we have a system that makes it very difficult to reward great teachers and very difficult to remove those teachers that are struggling and address those. And so if we believe the studies, and they're numerous, the most important factor is the quality of the teacher in the classroom, then why do we leave it to chance? We shouldn't leave it to chance.
Oh, it's KPIs. In the business world, we have KPIs, key performance indicators.
Sure, sure.
So why don't we have key performance indicators for teachers if pay them on outcomes?
Sure. Or at least some of their evaluation, even some of their compensation can be based on how students are performing academically. We've made progress in that. We have a career ladder in Idaho. Mm-hmm. We don't have a salary grid, right? And so this career ladder does bring in evaluations that influence how you move on income and compensation. And the most latest one that the governor has rolled out, student achievement will be part of a teacher's move to the highest rung.
Yeah.
So I think those are steps in the right direction. And I would just caution that it's steps in the right direction.
Yeah.
We still have a long ways to go. There's there's plenty of studies that show that just increasing teacher pay does not increase student achievement.
So are you basing, I mean, has it been proposed to, I'm going to speak for Tommy, I'm going to talk about my guys get paid and my gals get paid on performance. So close a deal, it represents this much. Can we base it on grades or is that too
generic? No, it'll primarily be based on student achievement focused on growth. And that's what's really, what does a teacher bring to the table is Johnny shows up at the school, day one of school, and he's at this level academically. Where is he at the end of the school year? Because the system we had before, which was based on just how many kids pass a test, you could have a kid show up 3 years behind. And at the end of the school year, they're only 1 year behind, but they're still not at grade level. So we say that's not successful. Mm. So measure growth, give teachers the autonomy and the tools mm-hmm. necessary, and you'll see amazing things happen. And also, it encourages teachers, the great teachers, to go where the growth opportunities are the greatest, mm-hmm. and that's in our schools that are struggling the most. So you incentivize your great teachers that know how to get academic mm-hmm. growth to go work with those student populations that are that struggle academically. Mm-hmm. So it's a win-win situation.
I do want to get on to some other stuff, but I have one more question.
Okay. All right.
Well, no, we got to go longer than that. We have to go longer than that. So let me ask you this. So one of the things that I always struggled with is just because you have suggestions for education or an outsider's look or whatever you want to call it mm-hmm. of, hey, we got to do better. Sometimes teachers take that negatively.
Yeah. Right?
Because I always put myself in their shoes where you've got people that have said, hey, I'm going to choose a career taking care of kids. And I look at the teachers in my kids' life. My goodness, we've been blessed beyond measure with so many teachers that have made a difference for them over the years. I mean, I could not thank them or pay them enough for what they've done for our family. And so talk about that balance and how you talk about globally, hey, systems are the problem, not the individuals. And I don't think that so many times I got hammered when I was running because from a systems approach, you go, there's no way you would set this thing up like this. It doesn't mean.
If we could start over today and had no history to influence our decisions, we would never set up a public education system the way we have today. We wouldn't. And so, you know, we don't have time, but I encourage people to have that conversation and think it through what it would look like and then aspire to it, right? Because that's what our kids need. Yeah. Tommy, to your point, oftentimes when somebody talks about improving education, identifying areas where it's not working and it can do better, there are some people whispering in their ears, he doesn't like teachers.
That's exactly right.
See, and so that's all that people hear. Oh, he must not like teachers. He's blaming teachers. Yeah. And nothing could be further from the truth. The other thing I realized and was a challenge was how many people in education will defend the system they're frustrated
with
because they're afraid of change.
So it killed me because you got to remember over 80 school districts, I put in the time to listen.
Yeah.
Understand, listen to complaints and from their own mouth to my ears, hear all the things that were messed up with their system. So then when you would come out with policy and say, hey, there are things that could be done, then the same
the same people would argue against
saying, hey, wait a minute.
But it's, you know, resistance to change, right? It's not limited to just education. I say everybody wants to go to heaven. Nobody wants to die to get there.
I tell you that every time.
And so people resist change.
Yep.
And so, but in education, it's on steroids.
Yeah.
And our kids are the ones that pay the consequences.
You're going to say, I can't wait to segue into the next thing.
All right.
I've been dying to ask you this. To have you on here. And I want you to get real personal with us. I know Grandma Luna.
Yeah. Great lady.
Talk to us a little bit about, you're an incredible guy. I know your family. And then we know two of your daughters, a couple of the strongest women, leaders, smart, mm-hmm. driven, motivated, unbelievable, you know, motors that I've ever seen. Tell us a little bit about your upbringing. Tell us a little bit about how you raised your kids. And for any listener out there, when I think of Tom Luna, I think of probably the most brilliant education guy I know of in my life that I know personally. I think of a business guy first that went into politics, who's incredibly successful. But I think dad.
Well, I think now you're going to choke me up.
Father. Yeah. And so if you're talking to, you know, we have a lot of entrepreneurs out there, but they're also family folks. Tell us what you did, what worked, and tell us about your family.
Well, you mentioned my mom. You know, she's an incredible lady. So my mom and dad, my mom was 15, my dad was 17 when they got married. My dad was raised in the ghettos of LA, the barrios, the Fontana, San Bernardino area. Mm-hmm. He decided when I was about 5 years old, he decided he was not going to raise us there and just have a generational thing. You know, he didn't graduate from high school. My mom didn't graduate from high school. And so his only thought was, we're leaving. So we left. I can remember living in a tent, mm-hmm. you know, and all these kids living in a tent. I'll jump forward, you know, living in a tent. One evening we had popcorn and French fries for dinner, and then we were out of food.
Yeah.
So the next morning they load us up in the car and we're driving around. My dad's just looking for day work, right? And we see this truck, this semi truck with these in my child's mind's eyes, these huge rocks, right? Yeah. So we followed this truck till it finally stopped. My dad went and negotiated with this guy on unloading this truck full of rocks.
Sure.
So we sat there. It was in Las Vegas, hot sun. We sat there in the car, watched him unload these rocks. He came back a few hours later, hands bloody, and he had a $10 bill in his hands, right? But so, I mean, we learned how to work.
Fine, baby.
We learned how to work. Yeah. And my dad taught us that all work was honorable, so any work was acceptable. Mm-hmm. And so we worked. And so as I got older and we worked sometimes in the fields and stuff, you know, when I was a teenager, I didn't work because I wanted a new, you know, cool pair of shoes. It was because the money went to the family. That's just what we did. Yeah. But what I was blessed with, we were poor, obviously, and homeless, I think, in mm-hmm. definitions today. But always, I would say we were houseless. We always had a home.
Yeah.
I had two parents that loved me. They loved each other. They were committed to each other, you know, and I never felt threatened or felt afraid of what was going to happen the next day or the next week. They figured it out, right? So they raised us that way with an unbelievable work ethic. And so all my brothers and sisters benefit from that work ethic and for the most part have gone on and done some pretty impressive things with their lives. My sister Teresa, under Governor Otter, she was the director of admin, know, which was a high position in his cabinet. So then when it came to our families, you know, my goal was I wanted my kids to have the same things that I did. So the first thing I did was I married the right gal, right?
Good choice.
Somebody that was, you know, like my mom, was totally committed to a home and a family. And, you know, Cindy chose, and it's important for me that people understand, she chose to forego a career because her career was going to be raise six kids.
Yeah.
Right. So we had all six of our kids before she was 30.
Wow.
Can you imagine that? I would go on these business trips. I'd come home and I would just kind of open up the door and kind of look in, kind of check the temperature, see how things are going before. Yeah. You know, just kind of, you know, just because I've never ever worked as hard as Cindy has worked. And so she, you know, what you see in those gals has as much to do with their mom and the influence that she's had on them.
It ties back into his education, though, because I hear your dad, first of all, he's a grinder. You can tell that.
Yeah, and he wore himself out, his body out working.
And he pushes upstream. So he pushes, I hear you talking about education reform. You push upstream. You don't go downstream. You just don't go along with it. Your daughter, Camille, she pushes upstream.
Yeah.
Hurricane, which I nicknamed her Hurricane Tina.
We call her Tornado Tina.
You call her Tornado Tina. I call her Hurricane. Hurricane pushes upstream, man.
Yeah.
And how did you inspire them to be such dynamic women leaders in the workplace? Did that just...
wish I could tell you what the secret sauce is. I can tell you that their mom is a strong person, but not somebody you don't want to be around because they've got, you know, and I think you know what I'm trying to say. Right?
The girls are a force to be reckoned.
Yeah, and I tell people, my wife and I have six kids, mm-hmm. all boys except for four. Mm-hmm. Those four gals in our family are a force, every one of them. And you've met two of them.
Yeah, they're a force.
Right? But not only do you see the side of them in the business and stuff, they are amazing mothers.
Yeah.
Camille has two kids. Tina has four daughters.
Yeah.
Four daughters.
Yeah.
And I mean, that they are amazing moms. They are amazing spouses. You know, they serve a lot in their communities.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they were younger, they got to be involved in politics mm-hmm. when I ran. They used to call it the Luna Brigade. Nobody had more people out there in parades and knocking on doors. You did the same thing in your campaign, Tommy. Yeah. You just had this mass of people.
Yeah.
And I know for a fact your opponents would just shake their heads and they would just berate their staff because Tommy was out there with this army.
We
of
won
people.
The parade game.
That's what you did. You did win the parade game.
And so I would just encourage people, you know, if they're looking for any advice, your kids need to know that they're the most important thing in your life, not just by words, but by deeds. Mm. And you won't defend them in wrongdoing, but mm-hmm. you'll be there to help them navigate when they make mistakes. Mm-hmm. You'll always love them. And you know, that we're together, nobody can break that Luna bond. Yeah. And so we just stick together. Most Sundays we're all together.
Yeah.
We have one daughter that lives in Arizona, the other five and they're in the grandkids. Most Sundays we're all together and they're all best friends. And so I just couldn't be more happy as a father to see that.
That's awesome. That's great. Can you come back?
Yeah. We just started. Anytime you want to talk more about education and maybe have a deep dive on some issues.
We didn't even get into technical education, which is
we could talk
for an entire episode just about what you've seen work, what's not working, why you see it as a need here in the Valley. We'll have you back for sure.
Let me just one more quick comment, because we've talked a lot about what we can do better in Idaho's education. You could take Idaho's most struggling school and drop it in the middle of any number of cities across the country, and people would stand in line for days to get their kids into that school.
Wow.
We're blessed with good people, strong families. And if you look at a national comparison, we have good schools. The challenge is, it's just not good enough.
Yeah.
Right. Our kids need more in the world that they're going to be living in. And so that's what drives me. And so I'm always very appreciative of the education my children have received. And when I travel around the country and I do a lot of it, I see how blessed I am that my kids were able to go to school here and be educated by the great people that are in our schools here in Idaho.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So coming back.
Yeah, I'll be back.
We'll talk technology and education.
All right.
Right now we learned about being a great dad. Learn about driving and grinding. Yeah. And we learn you guys know how to host a good parade.
That's right. Let's do it again, Tommy.
No. But hey, Tom, thanks. We appreciate you. You're a mentor.
That means a lot to me.
Can't thank you enough for all you do. Always do. The one thing I love about you is every time I see you, I'm like, what have you been doing lately? And it just always blows me away with what you do for everyone. And we appreciate that example. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much. Hey, everybody. This is Troy McClain and Tommy Alquist with Inspire Excellence Idaho. And for that information on Teens to Trade, go to InspireExcellenceIdaho.org and find out more about Teens to Trade if you're looking for something like that. Talk to you soon.
You've been listening to the Inspire Excellence Podcast. We invite you to find something that inspires you this week. Join us again for our next episode.